Okay, we are here in Building 99, and who are you?
I'm Rico Malver. I'm the Managing Director for Microsoft Research Redmond.
Microsoft Research Redmond. Okay, so, you know, research is a huge group. Why don't you give us a quick overview for people that maybe aren't familiar with MSR? What's the mission? Give us the overview.
Huge depends on the viewpoint, right? It's big, but Microsoft is really big. We're about 300 folks here in Redmond, mm-hmm. and our big mission is really pushing the state of the art of technology. What could we be doing 10 years down the road that people really will be able to use to make their lives better in terms of technology, right? And it's actually fun that we really like to hedge our bets. So we have, in my team here, we have about 30 different research groups, maybe 32 because it keeps changing, and in many different areas. So from databases, speech, human-computer interaction, and all kinds of stuff. I can barely keep up with what they're doing.
Yeah, yeah. I think everybody's suffering from information overload. But how did you personally join Microsoft and MSR? What's your backstory? Where'd you...
Well, that's actually a funny one. I can tell you the story how I hired Microsoft.
Oh, really? You hired Microsoft?
I'm kidding. I had a bunch of ideas back 10 years ago. I'm here. I just got my little glass sculpture, which is very nice. So I've been here 10 years. And one day I was in my old job, and I was not doing enough in terms of getting my hands dirty with research and stuff. So at the time, I sent an email, I remember it was on a Sunday, to Nathan Myhrvold, who was the CTO of Microsoft.
Yeah, of course.
And I said, just for fun, hey, Microsoft is not doing much in terms of research in digital media and all these things that could happen to media. And I figure, well, okay, this was an email sent to the CTO. Maybe someday we'll hear about it. Monday morning, I get an email from recruiting saying, we're from recruiting, we're trying to schedule your interview. And I was like, what?
Oh, that's
that
hilarious.
That was fast. Right. That's why I told the story, because they really caught me by surprise. Yeah. And of course, then the real thing is that my mail just hit them at the right time. They were thinking about these things, and then they say, oh, and there's this guy here who's thinking along the same line, so why don't we talk? We did talk. We started a group, and the group did many contributions. For example, we were talking about the round table. It was
let me see if I can give a quick view there. And you have the original one, right?
And we have back here the first prototype.
Awesome.
Yeah. And so, you can see, since your camera is pointing this way, I can't resist talking about hardware and stuff, because, I mean, I'm a double E. And this is a prototype of a sound card we did back in 87 when PCs didn't have sound cards.
Oh, really?
And we built up one so we could do some media experiments at that time. But, you know, we're talking 20 years ago, so that's kind of fun. See?
Yeah.
8-bit bus and old components.
Let me actually go see here, and you walk us through.
Yeah.
What kind of sound were we talking here?
It was very limited. All this thing did, you could pick up some audio thing and record in memory. 640K, mm-hmm. Remember when that's all we could do? And not even that, because you couldn't use all of it. And then, given a buffer in memory, it could play it back. So, and we needed that to do some experiments with speech and things like that. So it was fun.
Awesome, awesome. Yeah. And I can see by the size of it, it obviously isn't the laptop version.
Right.
there's a reason we don't do a lot of hardware at Microsoft.
Right? Exactly, yeah. But anyway, that was not a Microsoft product. That was way before. So, as I said, this was 20 years ago.
Yeah,
but
very early. Very literally early. 20 years ago.
But that shows why we keep playing with hardware things, because it's just fun.
Sure.
We can combine the two.
Yeah, so let's talk about some of the things that personally excite you. So I can see the smile crack on your face. This is cool stuff. So what are the things, and we have TechFest coming up next week. So what are the things that you're personally excited about?
You know, TechFest is a great event. I really, really like it. And you can see in the hearts and minds of our researchers how much they invest in engineers, mm-hmm. how much they invest, the researchers, the SDEs. Everybody works really hard to produce those demos, because we really want to put our best. Because this is an event for our developers, right? We mm-hmm. want them to come by, talk to us, and say, look, here's a bunch of cool ideas, but you are the guys down there in the trenches developing products. Let's work together. Let's bring those ideas. Hopefully, several of them will help you guys in Microsoft building better products for people. And that's the key thing. I mean, we are here in research, and it's fun to do research. It's fun to push the technology to the boundaries. But the really big reward is when we really hit on something. We don't always research the right thing. We make tons of mistakes. It has to be. But when we find the right things, and then we can work with our friends and the product teams and really deploy something new and make people more productive or happier in whatever way, that's really the main kick, right? We really get excited about that. Along those lines, for example, we have many areas in which we'll see there's some basic, 6 or 7 basic themes at TechFest, and all sure. the demos are within those themes. And there's tons of good ideas. For example, search. Search is a big deal. But if you look about it, I mean, the idea that you have this page in front of you and there's a little window and you type words and that's how you get information, is that really the ultimate interface for you to find information? Nobody wants to search. Mm-hmm. You want to find information that helps you.
Sure.
And you go and you type words in a box because that's what they gave us. That's what we gave people that.
Sure.
What if we gave them better things? What if they're working and we automatically figure out what they're trying to find out and give it to them? Wouldn't that be cool?
So it's like contextual information that could
exactly.
be relevant?
Contextual information, implicit searches that are going under the hood, and personalized. I mean, a classical example, you go and you type chips. What do you want to know about? Do you want to know about computer chips? Or do you want to know about potato chips, right?
Yeah, yeah. Or that 70s show. You know, you never know.
Or the 70s show. There you go.
And you don't have that context, that personalization.
And you could talk about searches for Bush. Are you a football fan? Or do you want to know about the president? You know, there's all these things. And the more we know your context, the more we can actually bring what you're up to, what matters to you. Because as search engines are today, they will bring you information based on their relevance as perceived by the whole web community.
Sure.
But that's not what you're after.
So sure, sure.
What we really should solve is bring to you what you want. And you'll see in TechFest some very interesting ideas. For example, something that help, and that's a direct help. An indirect help, but it can be very direct also, is translation tools. Mm-hmm. Maybe your native language is not English, and we can help you make better sense of English pages by translating them to you in your language.
Sure.
Right? Or vice versa, right? Mm-hmm. Or it's maybe you don't want to see anything in other languages, but you want a richer results in your search. So we can grab results that were not written in English and translate them to English. The cool thing is that if we do this right, the technology doesn't need to be perfect. It's hard to think of us having a super, no matter how intelligent, algorithm that will do as well as a person translating.
So you don't think we'll ever, you know, 10 years from now, 100 years from now, given the curves that will hit this level?
You know,
level?
Given the curves, we're always going to keep better and better. But the human brain, man, it's something. Right?
Okay.
So matching it may be very difficult. But doing something so good or reasonably good that you may say, you know, this may not be a perfect translation, but it's good enough. I got it. I got the information I want. And that's mm-hmm. what you want at the end. I'll give you an example. In MSDN, many of the help files in the knowledge base, for example, in English, in Spanish, they have been translated automatically from English to Spanish.
Sure, sure.
And when we check with our users, actually they are super happy. The satisfaction levels for the English, for the Spanish community is actually quite high, which shows that the automatic translation doesn't get in the way. On the contrary, allows us to more efficiently produce a lot more content for them.
Yeah, that's true. I also think it depends on the context. More technical things may be a little easier than...
Man, you got it. Exactly.
Two people on Facebook talking that use a lot of slang or Absolutely. Colloquialisms, you're Absolutely. Just not going to get it.
There you go. So the more you're specifically within a theme, and the more we can do it better. I'll tell another example of where this context thing. You probably saw recently Live Search for Windows Mobile. So in your phone. And the cool thing is that they did just the right vision of you need a multi-mode interface, because typing too much on a mobile phone, it's difficult.
Mm-hmm.
So you just speak what you're looking for. Mm-hmm. But then, because it has a nice screen, you don't want to be listening to returns, right?
Right, right.
So it sends back to you a result in the screen, right?
Yeah, that's one of the things where if you're trying to, like, text-to-speech, it can be difficult if you have to listen to multiple choices and you miss option 3, for example. It's a lot easier to see in a list and your only interface is touching.
Exactly, exactly. So you basically, you say, for example, suppose you're doing the way they position there, and Microsoft Research helped quite a bit with the speech engine and adapting the speech engine, because the problem is the quality of the sound is not that good. It is a mobile phone.
Sure.
There's lots of noise around and all of that. But then if you reduce the context, you can still make it work well in spite of the environment being bad, right? And then it is a great combination, because as long as you have reasonably enough recognition, it's enough to point to the keyword so that we can bring you relevant information. And they do that. And after you ask what you're looking for, then after that, you basically just click and get your thing all the way up to directions on how to get there.
Sure, sure. Yeah. Now, what do you think the cell phone of 10 years from now will be? Obviously, at some point, it's going to get too small for us to even, you know, use. Or what are the things that you see are going to revolutionize in say, 10-year time frame?
You know, I think... one of them is that size. I mean, the technology is already good enough to give you a cell phone at a pretty reasonable size, right? And you could argue that these cell phones that have keyboards, they just don't get much smaller, because then how small can the keys be,
yeah,
right?
The usability.
The usability. But then we're going to learn a lot more about how to minimize the keys you need to press. And there's a bunch of cool things about touch interfaces. Like, for example, we've been playing with surface computing for a long time, where you basically put your hands on things and move them around.
Right.
What's the equivalent of that in the phone? You're putting your finger on things, moving them around.
People would say the iPhone, probably.
Yeah, you know, we don't need to get there. But the idea of touch has been around. We've done a lot of things, and you'll see more. And the phones will have more connectivity options. They will have better connectivity options. For example, you'll see at TechFest great things our networking team is doing in terms of managing wireless connections, making them more reliable. Lots of cool things you can do under the covers to make it more reliable. For example, wouldn't it be great if your phone super automatically moved from being connected to the phone network to being connected to Wi-Fi network or being connected to Bluetooth or something, depending on what's available.
Sure.
Without you having to touch a thing. Maybe there is some sign-on thing that you do, but after that, you know, things work. So that kind of automatically moving things around for you in terms of network connections. This multimodal I just mentioned to you, you can take that to more levels, right?
Sure.
You may not necessarily watch a movie on a cell phone, but, you know, sometimes you're stuck somewhere and you may actually want to watch a movie on a cell phone.
Right.
But it's a two-hour movie and you only have half an hour. What if we play to you the cool half-hour version of the movie? And we figure out what is the cool half-hour version.
Oh, is that the intelligence going on there?
The intelligence going on. So when you add to these multimodal things our ability to intelligently understand the media and intelligently understand you, what is that you want, right? For example, one of our teams, the adaptive systems team, worked with Windows to do this thing we call Superfetch that actually is in Vista, right? Which is basically, instead of just caching applications based on what you want, you use the last, it's a smarter cache that is based on the usage patterns.
Mm-hmm.
So if every day at 11 a.m. you fire up Excel, next day comes close to 11, Excel is preloaded, because by the time you click, thing is instantaneous.
Right,
and
right.
People care about that because there's responsiveness of the machine.
It's the perceived responsiveness
based
on your behavior.
The perceived responsiveness, right. So you can actually make whatever limitations you have, disks are only this much fast, memory is only this much fast, you can help by being a bit more intelligent if you can analyze. So the idea that you can analyze the user and try to infer what the user intentions are, and on the other side, analyze the content and try to make sense of it and put the two together in a multimodal interface, that's what you're going to see cell phone growing into. Plus, with Moore's Law, allowing cell phones to have more memory and more processing power, we'll be able to really, even in the client itself, be able to do a lot of that. And with all the web connectivity I was mentioning, you can think of lots of creative client-server things. But the fact that the client itself will be able to do so much, it's seriously becoming a very important computing and information device for you as well.
Sure, sure.
And that role will only grow.
Yeah. Absolutely. So you mentioned some of the other things at TechFest and some of the different areas. What are some of the other areas? Obviously, a lot of things within hardware and you mentioned the adaptive research. Any other areas that interest you?
You know, we've done a lot of interesting things in computer graphics and visual media, and you'll see some cool new things at TechFest. You will see the latest version, for example, of the Worldwide Telescope, which is an incredible a project that puts together a bunch of visual technologies mm-hmm. and a bunch of connections with the scientific world out there, which is really cool. And I won't say much more than that to ask you guys to come by.
That's the demo. That's the project that made Robert Scoble cry quite infamously on the World Wide Web. So
right,
yeah,
and the latest things are really really nice. So it's a good one. So but in general, the idea that, for example, 10 years ago when I just joined Microsoft Research, we already had a very good computer vision team. We still have. At that time, some people would think, okay, computer vision, that's a thing maybe for Hollywood, do we really care about that? But look today, we're trying to deliver technologies and applications such as Worldwide Telescope. You look, for example, at Live Local 3D. Mm-hmm. Where you have all these 3D views with real images, right? And you have to analyze real images. You have huge collections of images, now three-dimensional. You have to find a way to paste them together, build basically a virtual environment that really it's getting pretty close to what the real world is. And you need tons of vision. So we're very happy that we had the foresight and the vision to invest on that 10 years ago. Because now we do have the expertise to help our folks in the product team in live, the local live team, a virtual Earth as we call, to actually deliver these technologies, and we're very happy teaming up with them.
So you mentioned those. Are there things that we're going to be seeing on local live or some of the virtual Earth projects that we'll be able to look at TechFest?
Yes, you will see some of those things in there, and I won't tell you exactly what they are again.
Okay, teasers
to go there. But these ideas of basically, for example, if I take a bunch of, I'll give you an idea that already shows in local life, and there's more coming along those lines. If you're looking at a map, mm-hmm. and you put it in a satellite picture mode. Right, it's a 2D view, right? The satellite is up here, looking down.
Right.
And it's very easy to scroll. I mean, the satellite takes a bunch of, let's say, square pictures, and then you just put them all together, and you seamlessly move from one to the other.
Right.
If I'm trying to give you a bird's eye view, now the pictures I may have, they were taken from different perspectives.
Right.
How do I mix them?
Right,
now
right,
you have
right.
all the geometric projections are different and all of that. And I have to figure all of that automatically from the pictures themselves, which means some level of content analysis of what's in the picture needs to be done. So that's where the computer vision background and technology gets in. So we actually need literally to distort the images so that they actually match, right? And if you try to build panoramas, actually, there was a lot of technology we've shown in previous TechFests
yes.
of how to put yes. photos together in a panorama. So these new problems is that taken to the next level mm-hmm. because now I need to infer 3D scenarios, environments, and all that to put them together. So and you'll see some of the latest things we've done around that.
Right? Cool. Sorry, did you have something?
No, no. Just one thing to mention. For example, you mentioned the round table that we have here on our
yeah.
side. You will see also things on the sound processing side. For example, one problem you have with round table is like any conference, live conference thing, is the echo problem.
Sure. Right?
Because if the person is talking to you, this loudspeaker is playing their voice, but then their voice comes back to the microphones. And if you don't do something smart, these microphones will send back to the person their own voice.
Right, right.
So you get
right.
an echo. So how do you filter that out? How do you filter that out if your sound is not just one speaker, but a whole multi-channel thing? The cool thing about that, if you put that on a mathematics level, it's almost as kind of you have this differential equation. I mean, many of you guys watching us have studied that sometime in your life. And imagine a differential equation of like 20,000.
Really?
So it's an equation with 20,000 coefficients in it. And that defines how the sound moves back from the speaker to the microphone. Basically, what our system has to do is estimate that on the fly and figure out these coefficients.
Right, because you need instantaneous.
You need instantaneous canceling of this echo.
Wow.
Right? So basically, it's an adaptive system that models that and is constantly adjusting the model. So there's a very interesting set of math tools that go under the hood and all this stuff.
Now, somebody that, say, you mentioned some of the math tools. What if somebody was interested in coming to work at MSR? What are some of the things that you look for in, obviously, like intellectual curiosity? But right. what are the things, what advice would you give to the prospective MSR candidate?
All right. Well, one of them is that most of our positions are actually researcher positions. And for those, it's good if you have formal training, all the way up to having a PhD, for example.
Sure.
And in our SDE positions, most of them are what we call RSDE, research SDEs. Many of those also have PhDs because it helps them communicate with researchers because those RSDEs, they work with our researchers so we can build meaningful prototype. We don't want to go to our friends in the product team just with a bunch of ideas. Mm-hmm. We want to talk to them and say, here's a bunch of ideas, and here's some code that actually implements those ideas.
Right.
It doesn't mean that code is good code that they can just plug in the products. Probably not. We're not as good engineers as they are in terms of writing product code. But it's a reference that they can use to then take on from there. Because nothing better to explain something than the real thing, right? I
sure.
can explain you a bunch of math equations. You may understand it, no problem. But if I show you the code, then you can go in, fiddle. It's a different level.
Sure, sure.
Right? But then, formal training is good. But as you said, you nailed it. Curiosity and the desire to go after the next thing is super important. And also important is that here at MSI, we have to look at, as our mission, look very far away in the future and push the state of the art of the technology. But in doing that, we also need to figure out how do I get there in a meaningful path so I can start at the same time today, talk to my friends and the product teams and figure out, look, what about this vision? And they may buy into this vision, but then the next thing is, well, but my product is next year or 2 years down the road. This is too far. So mm-hmm. how can you take steps to get there and at the same time help with the current products we have or current product ideas we have in Microsoft, right?
Awesome.
So that idea, and also not being stuck on something. You may be super good at doing problem X. Sometimes problem X goes away and there's a new problem that is actually more important. So people have to having them this flexibility to move into the new problem and go after that new problem.
So does that mean you're looking more for generalists or specialists or more somebody that's open to moving to different ideas?
You know, we actually, given our size, we need a little bit of everything.
Sure.
But it's good to see, no matter how good you are and specialized you are in one thing, the definition of what the problem is that you care about is going to change. Right. For example, I'll give you one idea. One little thing I worked on is how do you compute Fourier transforms and things like that. So, and we had the problem definition up to the late 80s was how do you reduce the number of operations you need to do to compute that.
Mm-hmm.
Today, that doesn't matter. Because by the time I read one number from memory, the processor is so fast, the time it takes to read one thing from memory, you can do so many computations that memory access now is the metric. So, whoops, the problem flipped.
Right,
and a bunch
right.
of things we had learned, some of them from heavy number theory concepts and things like that, throw away. It's a new game.
Right.
So the ability to figure out that it is a new game and switch to the new game and go after it, it's really important for us. Yeah,
that's very interesting. Now, how about you? And you had mentioned you still like to play with hardware. What projects are you doing on the side or to play with? What's some of the fun stuff you're working on?
Well, liking to do something and actually being able to do it are different things.
Yes, I know too well.
That applies to about everybody. And in my case, I mean, that the management, my job is a management job, so I don't have too much time. So at the end, the little bit of technical time I have mostly goes into a little bit of software. But this hardware thing is interesting. So every now and then when I can, I ping my friends who do the real work here, for example, in the sound processing. Mm-hmm. And I like to fiddle a little bit, and sometimes we work together. And, for example, last TechFest, they surprised me with a very good working demo of a speaker array that by playing a sound, not only through one speaker or two, but a whole line of speakers, you can actually focalize the sound such that if you're here, you listen to the sound, you move 3 feet, the sound goes
completely gone.
Maybe not completely, but almost. And you can use that for kiosks or for better communication within a cube, so you can listen to a phone call or a computer message without bugging your neighbor. So there's plenty of applications to that.
Right.
And the funny thing is that I told them the year before, they told me, oh, we want to do that. And I told them, nah, I know the stuff. It won't work. And it's funny because some people told me, what kind of management technique is that? You're not motivating your team. I guess it worked because a year later they knocked at my door. Rico, remember that thing you said it wouldn't work? I said, yeah. Want to see a demo? And I was, and my eyes were like this. As soon as they said you want to see a demo, I said, man, they nailed this thing. And sure enough, they did. So it's funny. Sometimes if you pick up a very motivated person and say you can't do that, they will.
That's exact motivation for right. For showing that they can in fact be done.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Great. Anything else you wanted to add about TechFest? TechFest will be next week. We're going to be showing a couple of projects.
Right. And I'm assuming in the audience there's a bunch of Microsoft engineers.
Yeah,
what
absolutely.
I would say to all of you guys, please don't miss on the opportunity to join us. It's great. It's messy. It's big. But it's a lot of fun. So please, if you can, do take the time to come and see our demos. I think you'll like it.
Awesome. Well, great, Rico. Thank you for
all
your
right.
time.
All right. Thank you.